Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Two Weird Hungry Girls podcast. This is Phoebe, your host, here recording at the Kutztown Folk Festival in the summer kitchen with Terry. And we're going to be talking about like food, Pennsylvania Dutch food. And I'm kind of excited, and I'm sorry you're not here, Tracy, because I think you probably would have really enjoyed this. I'll get some pictures so you can see and post them on the website or the blog that accompanies this podcast. But Terry, thank you so much for letting me sit in your kitchen and record with you, because it's like a busy morning, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit about what you do with this kitchen.
Well, the kitchen itself is sponsored by the Albany Township Historical Society. So technically we're a demonstration reenactment kitchen. We're reenacting or demonstrating what would have taken place in a summer kitchen, technically around the turn of the century, but summer kitchens are still in use today in a lot of areas.
Really?
Yes.
Where?
Yes. Lancaster County.
Oh.
Particularly.
When you called a summer kitchen, like I know what I'm sitting in this space. Like, mm-hmm. How is a summer kitchen defined, or how would you describe it?
Well, from the 1600s on, oftentimes you had an outdoor kitchen, and that was common in the South and the North here. If you drive throughout the countryside here, you see the large farm homes. Mm-hmm. If you look behind them, it looks like there's a little house behind them. Normally, that was the summer kitchen.
Is that because of the heat generated by your wood stove, and they didn't want that kind of heat in the...
They didn't want it in the house, mm-hmm. so they wanted to keep the house as cool as they could through the summer months mm-hmm. to begin with. But also, especially in the later summer months, early fall, when they were harvesting, the harvest meals were cooked in the summer kitchens, so the farmhands were going into the summer kitchen to eat and not traipsing through the house and making things dirtier for the housewives and things mm-hmm. that way. Summer kitchens were also used. They kind of did double duty depending on where you were. The larger... What my parents used to call hokuka, which the kind of the high cooking or the larger cooking projects were done there too, mm-hmm. canning, butchering.
Oh, okay.
In Lancaster County, a lot of them also double as the laundry rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So you heated your wash water there, for the folks that are off the grid still. So you heat your wash water there. You have a washing machine that's run by the gas engine.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And,
so it's typical that then the space kind of like evolves and changes through the summer season. Like it might have a big table like your summer kitchen has and then the fireplace, but then a table might be removed to whatever, do your laundry. Or you're hosting then the farm workers to come in and eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a fluid definition
of a kitchen
space.
It's a fluid space, but I think the high point normally is the summer months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you even, Terry, get involved in the summer kitchen, and how are you known? If people were to come to the folk festival, how do people ask for you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm one of several cooks here.
Mm-hmm.
So Dottie's one of our cooks. Lucy, John. So we kind of rotate things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 9-day festival. I took mm-hmm. 4 days this year. Depending on my own schedule, I try and take the week off from work, so I make sure to have a couple days available. Actually, going back a couple years, I've come to the folk festival most of my life, but I came here. I was talking with one of the cooks, and he was telling me that they had a problem with the stove. They were having problems with it only cooking one side of things. They had to keep turning it, and not to be smart with him, but I asked him if he had turned the oven on.
Uh huh.
And he didn't know that even though it's a wood-burning stove, there's a way of turning the oven on that makes the oven...
Really?
Yes.
That kind of like allows the heat into the oven cavity space?
Well, it's more convection within the stove
okay.
itself. When the stove is just being used to cook in heat, the oven damper is off,
mm-hmm.
and the gases only go along the top and out the flue.
Mm-hmm.
When you want to use the oven, you trip the damper, and it actually changes the airflow in the stove, so it goes over the top of the oven, down the side, and around the bottom and out the back. So that way all four walls of your oven are hot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're not using the oven to bake, but if you just want to do something like low and slow, as they say,
mm-hmm.
the oven itself, when the stove is running, when there's fire in it, your oven is about 200 to 250 degrees. So it's nice to do roasts, long-term roasts, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So aside from just having the notion to ask, did you turn the stove on or the oven on? How do you know all of these things about cooking?
Well, in part, I had a very good teacher, my mom. Mm-hmm. I did not grow up with a wood stove, although mom would say, well, now if you're doing this, well, she was teaching me how to cook when I was younger. She'd say, now, if you had a wood stove, you would look for this, or you would do this. Or she taught me how to test the temperature with my elbow. If you hold your elbow in for so many seconds, it's ready to cook bread, or it's ready to cook biscuits, or that kind of thing. And so it's something I kind of grew up with. And then about 30 years ago, I should go back a little bit before that. When I was a teenager, I bought one, and my dad and I rebuilt it.
Uh-huh.
Never got to use it, but we rebuilt the stove. It was a 1920s beautiful pearl gray enamel cook stove that was made in Quakertown, actually. There used to be a foundry there. But then 30 years ago, I rented a farm out in Kempton, and they had it set up that I think at one time it probably was the summer kitchen of the house. And so they had a wood stove in there at one point, but I had a cook stove installed there. And it was an Irish stove made by the Waterford Stanley Company. A nice, nice little cooker. For every stove I've worked on, the drafts and dampers and things tend to be a little bit different, but the general idea is the same. It's all convection within the stove. And so, and the rest of it's been some bit trial and error, but I had a good basis with what mom taught me.
Do you still have the stove now?
The Waterford Stanley, I left the people that rented the place after I did bought the stove for me. But currently I live in between Tamaqua and Lehighton. I have a small farm up there. We have a summer kitchen that I have a wood stove in. It's a new stove. It's made by the Heartland Company. Heartland makes two sizes. They make one called the Oval that heats about 3,500 square feet. Mine is the Sweetheart. It's its little sister, so it heats between 2,000 and 2,500 square feet. So even though it's technically the summer kitchen, for me it's a winter kitchen because I use the stove in the fall, winter, and spring. So I'm baking on one of these things about 8-9 months out of the year, depending on the weather.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. I didn't know people still did that. But that's really great.
Yeah, I mean, between the United States, Canada, Ireland, and a couple places in Europe, there's probably 6 different companies that are still making wood-burning stoves.
So there's a market for it.
There is. There is. Well, you have... I mean, here in the States, you have about 300,000 Old Order Amish that would not have an electric stove in their home. So they're using either wood, kerosene, or gas. And primarily, they'll use a wood stove, especially in the fall and winter, to cook and heat with. But besides that, I mean, you still have some pretty rural places, especially in Canada. But even in the States, there's a decent market for it outside of the Old Order community itself.
So let's quickly talk about, in the summer kitchen, in the space where you're using the stove, you have like the old farm table, your cast iron, and all of your pottery bowls. The summer kitchen is something that the vendors of the folk festival will share like a family style meal at, and then folks can come and like look and ask questions about the food and how it's prepared and the recipes in this space. What are some of the recipes that you prepare when you're here?
Well, as I said, we're a demonstration kitchen, so we demonstrate cooking. The meals that we make are pretty traditional Pennsylvania German recipes. So folks come by and they ask us questions about what we're cooking, and then at some point we demonstrate eating. So that makes it pretty fun for the folks. We're not a restaurant, so we're not licensed in that respect, so it's kind of like coming to grandma's house. But the vendors, it's a kind of a lottery system that we use. That invite the vendors to come and sit for either a noontime meal or an evening meal.
And what are some of the... when people come through and they ask questions about some of the traditional Pennsylvania Dutch dishes, what do you think are some of the most popular Pennsylvania Dutch dishes that people are familiar with? And what are some that people may not know are like a Pennsylvania Dutch style dish.
Well, I think one thing, I mean, Dottie is our pot pie expert.
Is she?
Absolutely.
Uh-oh.
Absolutely. It doesn't get any better than
so
that.
So if I find out there's pot pie, I should find the vendor who has a ticket and like trade
and
them
them
something.
Yeah.
Oh, club them. I'll do that.
Or swap them. I mean, you know. But her pot pie is exceptional.
And that's
and
like...
It's all homemade.
Okay.
Homemade noodles and, mm-hmm. and everything. Pennsylvania German pot pie is different than English pot pie. Some people call it slippery pot pie.
Yeah, okay.
But it is more of a very thick, hearty soup than mm-hmm. it is a baked pie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably one thing that people are very, very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the lesser known things, like pig stomach.
Oh, okay. Do you prepare that here?
Mm-hmm. We
is
do
that
make that
like
on
a stuffed? I know
It's actually a stomach that is stuffed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending on where you're from, the stuffing may be a little bit different. I grew up in Northampton County.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm used to is shredded cabbage, diced potatoes, smoked sausage, onions, boneless pork.
Okay.
All that's mixed together, salt, pepper. Mom threw a little bit of ginger and like a smidge of coriander in it.
Ginger and coriander. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then... you stuff the pig stomach. It's basically, it's a steam pot that the dish is cooked in.
Mm-hmm.
So the stomach itself gets very brown and crispy like a sausage casing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people kind of wrinkle up their nose when they find out that it's pig stomach. But, I mean, if you eat sausage, you're eating pig intestine. So it's the same, you know, kind of concept.
Yeah.
If it's made right, you can actually slice it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a nice slice with just the... piece of stomach around it to hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
Something called schnitzelnep, maybe something that's a little more familiar too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thick soup that's made with ham, potatoes, onions, dumplings, and dried apples.
Like a biscuit dumpling? Mm-hmm. Like a drop biscuit.
Like a drop
top.
Biscuit.
Okay.
Or, I mean, depending, you go back far enough, they were leavened with yeast before baking soda came about,
mm-hmm.
or baking powder even. So you'd use a drop dumpling like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of a fall winter dish, but the dried apples are things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we call it schnitzelnep. I've seen recipes for something called Silesian Heaven. In German cookbooks, that it sounds very familiar. They're very, mm-hmm. very similar to schnitzelnep.
Okay. Well, that's
Schnitz
interesting.
Schnitz means a quarter of a dried apple.
That's what schnitz means. And when you say...
Technically. Schnitzen means to cut.
Oh, okay.
Like Scherenschnitte is a way of cutting paper in a pattern. But apple schnitz or schnitz is an apple that's been peeled... cored, cut in quarters, and then dried, dehydrated.
I never knew that. So that term is almost like a verb, instead of like a noun to describe what apple schnitz is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cut apple.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that. Okay, well, there's an aha moment.
It's almost like rivels, too.
Yeah.
Rivels,
mm-hmm.
rivel soup, it's a homemade pasta that's a little bit smaller than orzo,
mm-hmm.
but... Some rivla is to take your fingers and go like this.
That's what that means?
Yes.
So what you're doing is like you're kind of taking, if you take all of your fingers and touch them to your thumb and you're...
Working the dough, yeah.
Right. So you work the dough to almost kind of like break it up, right?
Make a crumb out of it.
And drop it into the soup.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. What's the word one more time?
Rivel.
Rivel's the word, but did you say you're riveling? Is that what you say? Would you I'm going to rivel this pasta?
Well, you can say that.
Uh-huh.
I have a recipe from my mom that's still in dialect. But it starts out with rivel tsunoma, which means like crumb together.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So it's like butter and flour. It's a cake recipe.
Okay, I have so many questions now. because we haven't even gotten to sweet yet. But is your mom... What are your mom's roots then that you still have her cookbooks that are written... Are what they written in?
I have a couple recipes that are still written in dialect.
Uh-huh.
Most of her stuff was in English, but mm-hmm. and I don't know if she got them from members of our church or.
Oh, okay.
Mom's background, her side of the family came from Baden,
mm-hmm.
Germany in the 1820s. My dad's side of the family, they came over in the 1750s. They were from Alsace-Lorraine. German speaking, but we kind of have a German French last name.
Mm-hmm.
But the cooking, I think pie is a very important thing in Pennsylvania German culture, and I think sometimes it replaced, because strudel is very important in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of became the American, the Pennsylvania German strudel in some respects, although Mom would make strudel too.
Mm-hmm.
Pie seemed to have more of a place in Pennsylvania German homes. Than,
mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not sure if that's because of Alsatian roots with tarts and things in France, or if that's more, I'm not sure.
Yeah. What did your mom have, like, a favorite? Was she, like, a savory eater or a sweets eater?
I would say it was a combination.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Typical of Pennsylvania German families. I mean, we had pie for almost every meal.
Mm-hmm.
So there was breakfast pie. That would have been shoe fly pie, funny cake, rivel cake, kind of a crumb cake with buttermilk. For supper, she did make supper pies, like mm-hmm. meat pies. There's a dish called Moravian chicken pie.
What? Moravian? I've heard of Moravian sugar cake, but never Moravian chicken pie.
Moravian chicken
okay.
pie. The difference between Moravian chicken pie and what we, or what English people know as pot pie, the Moravians didn't put any vegetables in it.
Oh, okay.
It's just chicken meat, a little bit of onion, a very thick, hearty gravy that binds it all together, two crusts, and it's baked.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that comes out of our communal period.
Mm-hmm.
It, as I understand it, it was something that was served sometimes at weddings and things when we mm-hmm. were a communal people, communal society. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's some, I mean, I think some from religious backgrounds, some of our recipes are a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
that being one of them. But I also grew up with pea and potato soup.
Uh-huh. Pea and potato, like just whole peas and potatoes.
Whole peas, potatoes, onions, butter, milk.
Oh, that sounds good.
When I got to French class in high school, I mm-hmm. learned that it was Vichyssoise.
Oh, okay.
I grew up eating this stuff
right.
and never knew never really knew what it was
mm-hmm.
called kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
So you learned your love of cooking, do you think, from your mom?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, we weren't technically farmers, but we were a rural family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we did butcher, we did can, we had a huge garden.
Mm-hmm.
Dehydrated, made dried beans, dried corn, dried apples.
Mm-hmm.
Made our own apple butter.
Mm-hmm.
Made our own scrapple, all kinds of stuff.
On your farm now, is it like open for tours, or is this just farming that you do for you? And
it's
your family and your friends.
More subsistence.
Oh, okay.
More subsistence farming.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I have a flock of poultry. I have a quarter acre garden and a small
mm-hmm.
orchard and things. So it's, but when I have excess, I mean, I have a lot of folks that buy eggs from me
yeah.
at work, that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
So for you then, eating in season and eating real foods is like, you're not going out and buying boxed or prepared dishes. Do you ever cheat on anything? You're never
normally.
Doing that.
Uh-huh. Not normally.
You can't
no,
imagine.
No, I'm pretty much of a scratch cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you a sweet or a savory eater? Like, what's your weakness in the kitchen?
Oh. Carbohydrate.
Oh.
I have yet to meet a carbohydrate that I didn't like. So,
uh-huh.
So noodles, dumplings,
yeah.
bread, I mean, anything like that is,
okay.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
fair game.
Uh-huh. Now, someone said the vendor next to me had mentioned that you made a lemon chiffon cake.
A lemon sponge pie.
A lemon sponge pie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Is that like a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch dish?
That's very traditional.
Is it?
Yeah.
A lemon sponge, is that
lemon
like...
Lemon sponge pie.
Mm-hmm. Is it foamy?
Well,
because
it's
a pie?
It has almost like a very light cake layer on the top.
Uh-huh.
But below that is almost a pudding custardy layer.
Okay.
And then the pie shell.
Kind of like a shoe fly pie separates, or no?
Mm.
Is it almost like meringue on the top?
No, it's
no?
more of a very fine, almost a fine, like a
mousse?
I'm thinking more of angel food.
Oh, okay.
Like a very fine. I wouldn't say it has quite the same texture as angel food, but
uh-huh.
I would describe it more as a very light.
Is it the eggs?
It's the eggs and flour
that do that.
Yeah.
Give it that texture.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you separate your eggs, and so
mm-hmm.
you make a certain part of it out of the yolks and lemon juice and butter and flour
mm-hmm.
and things, and then milk. and then the rest of, you beat the egg whites and combine, fold the egg whites into that mixture.
Mm-hmm.
So it really lightens it up. But then when you bake it, that light part comes to the top and forms this kind of cakey layer.
And you're doing it all in the, I'm going to get a picture of that oven.
Yeah.
And you're doing it all in this oven.
Yes. Yes.
Like sometimes when you think of baking and it being so precise, you think that sometimes even your own electric oven at home has it out for you because it, do you know what I mean? Like one shelf burns it, one corner wants to burn it, the other corner wants to leave it unbaked, and then you're making these little miracles out of this oven.
Well, these, like I said, every stove I've worked on is a little bit different. They all have their quirks. They can all can be cantankerous.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of one of those things that you, I mean, when we get this thing going, I can keep temperature at 350, 400 for a couple of hours,
okay.
depending. It's a matter of setting the dampers and you know, kind of having a feel for things.
You know what you're doing. It's okay. You can say you're an expert on this. He's dropping wood into the oven right now. Darn, I have to get a picture of that because just to see. No, I don't care.
He's firing up the stove.
Yes. Oh, is that what he's doing? He's firing it up now?
Mm-hmm.
So he's putting kindling in the side.
Well, that's actually wood that we're going to burn. I mean, if you notice, our oven's about 300 now.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then at some point we'll flip the damper that will kick it up even higher.
Oh, okay. So this is all fascinating to me. I think.
Morning, everybody.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I feel like we should talk again about like more recipes. But how can listeners find? Like, do you have a resource or like books or a website that people that you might refer people to for some very traditional recipes if people want to try them at home? Like dishes you mentioned.
One thing I can tell you, I mean, we have a wonderful cookbook.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've seen this here before.
The majority of recipes that we make here
are in this cookbook.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The lemon sponge. There is a lemon sponge pie recipe in here.
Are any of your recipes in this book?
No.
Okay. So this book is called Folk Art and Food Ways of the Pennsylvania Dutch. Oh, it has an ISBN number, so you could find it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even
on
Amazon.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay.
This is put out by the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
The lady who put this together, Mrs. Lutz, she was a self-taught artist. She was kind of a Pennsylvania German Grandma Moses.
Yes, her style is very much like that. Uh-huh.
But she cataloged her memories of growing up on the farm years ago through art, and she also wrote quite a bit. So there's a lot of stories in here by her about the different seasons. The book itself kind of goes along seasonal lines.
Mm-hmm. Or you said none of yours are in here, but I see Jane's potato salad and Gary's.
I came on the scene after the book was put together. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so this is how people can take home recipes.
This is one way. There are a couple websites on Facebook. There's Grammy's Kitchen or Grammy's Table. Grammy's Table, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania German Foods. There's several. If you just punch in Pennsylvania German on Facebook, you'd be surprised at what comes up. But there's quite a few Pennsylvania German Life and Culture, Pennsylvania Language. There's a bunch of different things.
I'm going to Google these things myself, too.
Sure.
And do more reading. And I think I'll have to get one of these cookbooks before we leave.
The sugar cookies that we have, the recipes in there, it's Mrs. O'Boy's sugar cookie recipe. Okay. They're just absolutely great.
And you always have samples of them up on the front plate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until they're gone.
Until they're gone. Or until they're all.
Okay, wonderful. Until they're what?
All.
Oh, is that like that? Is that how you would say Dutch? Until they're all?
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that. Okay.
Sinsifodixin. Till they're all.
Till they're all.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, how would you say like good eats or cheers or manja in like Pennsylvania Dutch?
Well, to say cheers, especially around food, it's gemütlichkeit.
One more time.
Gemütlichkeit.
Mm-hmm.
Gemütlichkeit. If you're in a restaurant and you clink glasses together,
yes.
You gemütlichkeit, it connotes hominess, coziness around the table, food, family love, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to translate it correctly into English, but that's the concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
Gemütlichkeit.
Okay.
Like to say I wish you good eats.
Mm-hmm.
Ich wünsche dir gute Fressen.
Okay.
Fressen is to eat. Although in High German, Essen is the word to eat. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania German is Fressen. Fressen really means as the cattle eat.
Oh.
So, well, if you've ever seen farmers eat after coming in from the field.
You know, well, there you go. Yes.
You know, they're a hungry lot.
Uh-huh.
So.
Okay, that's great. I feel like we should end it there, but I want to say thank you so much for letting me come and sit in the kitchen and learn a few things. Thank you so much for the tips on where you can find some of these wonderful recipes and the stories that go along with them. And when you're at the Kutztown Folk Festival, you should stop by the Summer Kitchen to talk with and connect with the food volunteers.
The food volunteers.
Yeah. And meet the stove. It's the same stove that's here from year to year, right?
Yes.
For the most part. I remember that color.
That is like 1930s, 1940s Kalamazoo, Maine, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
The Kalamazoo and Home Comfort stoves were the kind of Cadillacs of the wood burning stove era. Yeah.
It's really beautiful. I like the color.
The cream and green, that was a very common thing. Art Deco has very Art Deco lines to it if you look at it. Very sleek, streamlined. This has a warming, a water boiler on the side. Mm-hmm. So if we wanted to, we could make hot water on the side of it. And it also has the warming closet on the top. 19th century microwave.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have brought my mac and cheese leftovers. No microwaves in this place.
You can put things in to either keep them warm or warm them up. Like at home when I'm making breakfast, like pancakes and things, I put the plate of pancakes that I've already taken off the griddle in the warming closet as I'm making more. And then that way everything gets served at once, piping hot.
When are you going to open a bed and breakfast? I do have an Airbnb. You should have an Airbnb. I'm going to find it. I'm going to keep Googling it until I see it on there. Terry's Airbnb. I would totally come.
That would be wonderful.
You're like our very own... do you know who Sweet Paul is? He has the magazine. Mm. He does all kinds of creative things. He's very inspiring. You're like our own Pennsylvania Sweet Paul.
Oh, well, thank you.
To find him, I'll show you who he is. But thank you so much for letting me visit your kitchen.
Sure.
And definitely come to the Folk Festival. Find the volunteers. If Terry's here, you should say hello. I think he goes also by Chef Terry. So if you just yell, Chef Terry, he's probably by the stove. And he'll tell you all about it, the stove. So thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. This was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in, guys. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave us a review. Let us know what you think. And I hope you go and find some Pennsylvania Dutch food inspiration online or by ordering this book put out by the Historical Society of Albany Township. So thanks for tuning in. You can find me at phoebespurefood.com and, of course, on Twitter, Instagram, and all of those great places. Thanks so much. Bye, guys.
Bye.